You're listening to Beyond Damascus, the show where encounter meets mission. Beyond Damascus is aired on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network and across Ohio on St. Gabriel Radio.
Jack, may I ask you if there's any other questions that we might be able to entertain during this time of recording?
Brad. Yeah, you can ask me.
Okay, yeah. Is there a question that we might be able to entertain?
It's called a question of the week.
Yeah, the question of the week, Brad, is how can I navigate the challenges of being part of multiple communities, church, school, work, and maintaining mission in each?
That is such a long question.
Yeah, how can I navigate? What was the word they used?
The challenges of being a part of multiple communities.
Yeah, it's a good question.
I love this question. I want to throw in my two cents.
Yeah, do it, Aaron. Today. Almost. Yeah. Second cent.
So the way that I'm thinking about this is often similar to the advice that I'll give to somebody who is entering into engagement, to when I'm kind of counseling or offering advice to married couples or engaged couples getting ready for marriage. Understanding mission is, let me say it this way. Mission is different than what you do. I believe that mission at its core is actually a part of who you are. It's who we are. So mission is closer to identity than it is to a task. Mm. And I think the church would support that fundamental to our mission, or fundamental to our identity as a church, is a call to holiness and a call to mission. Mm-hmm. Right? You cannot be Catholic if you're not called to holiness and called to mission. And I would suggest you cannot be human if you're not called to holiness and called to mission. So mission is a part of who I am. And the sooner that I begin to give thought to and reflection to and come to realize and identify with what is the mission on my life, who I am, will allow me to be a more consistent person across all categories. A quick example of this. So I used to, I was a youth minister in a parish for a long time. And I was afraid of sharing the passion that I had and the mission that I felt that God had called me to in Catholic Youth Summer Camp in Damascus. So what I found is that when I was at work, I would kind of hide this part of my missional call. And the dynamic that created was ultimately that I was being inauthentic with my, parish workmates. And mm-hmm. I was being inauthentic to myself when I existed in that context. So it led me to just places of constantly trying to hold tension and balance about who do I tell what and who do I express excitement about what? And I find that life is a lot easier and more simple when I can walk into any scenario and say, hey, I'm the guy who's passionate about this thing. I'm the guy who feels called to this thing. All my language is always going to be consistent. And if I happen to be at the parish and there isn't really an expression of that specific thing at my parish, that's okay. I can be my authentic self and I can help out in whatever way I can. Mm-hmm. If I'm at the workplace, I can be my authentic self and I can engage in whatever way makes sense. And I think as long as you can be authentic to actually asking fundamentally, what is the mission that God's placed on me? And then bring that into whatever relationship you have, that's a key to living a consistent and a healthy expression of faith.
Yeah, I think that's, what I'm hearing you say is authenticity and consistency. And that's definitely true in my life. I found, I'm forgetting who said it, but a clip one time of someone being interviewed that had a line that just stood out to me a lot. And it was, if you never lie, you never have to remember what you said. Mm-hmm. And it's very similar to what you're saying there. If I'm the same all the time, I don't have to remember who I was supposed to be in this context versus this context versus this context.
Yeah.
I'm just who I am in every context. Yep. And that will beget mission just by being who I am mm-hmm. in the environment that I'm in.
I feel like I may have been unclear. So why is this helpful in the context of engagement?
Yeah.
Because a lot of times two people will come into engagement and they'll think to themselves, there's this pressure that I'm really excited about this thing, but I can't bring it up because I don't want to overwhelm my spouse or my significant other, right? I don't want to silence her because the thing that I'm excited about is going to not support the thing that she's excited about. So we end up kind of developing this mindset that this has to be a 50-50 thing, and that I'm going to walk on eggshells, that if I feel like, gosh, I've gone over my 50% mark, then I'm taking too much of the pie here. Mm-hmm. And that dynamic is just really pervasive in the context of what do I bring to the table? And I feel like if you can just be honest up front that, hey, this is not just the thing I like to do,
yeah,
but it's actually something I believe that it's who I am. A person can choose to love that and to celebrate that.
Mm-hmm. I think a good way to do that is to actually write a personal mission statement. So your personal mission statement often isn't about what you're actively doing. It's about how you're going to do things. Right. And so Sweet. It's what are you called mm-hmm. to? And that personal mission statement enables you to really examine, okay, this is how I'm going to express the call of my life. And that's expressed at the different category, at church, at school, at work, in your family, wherever you are, who your call is expressed in a variety of ways there versus mm-hmm. I'm a catechist at my parish. That is missional work at your catechist, but God isn't asking you to be a catechist at your parish. He's asking you to do catechesis at your parish in a particular way. Right. Yeah. It's so we don't need just more people volunteering volunteering for things, whether it's how you're called to do it. Yeah. And I think that's the mission statement will get you away from I have to do to everything I do, this is how I'm going to do it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. Hope that's helpful.
Yeah. Well, it also, I think I can go next, but before that, I was also remembering, I think it was Pope Francis who wrote, and I don't think it was an Evangelii Gaudium, but I can't remember if it was an apostolic exhortation or if it was just a homily, but he once said that like, you're not a person on mission, but you by your existence are a mission. And so he was saying that in the context of discerning mission in your life. So like people would be like, how do I discern what's the right mission for me? He's like, well, actually by getting to know who you are, like what brings you life and how can you best bring people to the Lord? How can you best bring people to fulfillment? How can you best bring people to love? And I thought that was an awesome idea.
Whoa, his 2 cents came in.
Yeah, 2 cents to the jar. My 2 cents, I think, is going to center around the concept of prioritization. And it's funny because throughout the course of my life, I think prioritization is probably one of my weakest traits as a leader. And I think that's why it's what comes to mind when I hear this question, because over the last couple of years, I have found that in prioritizing my life, it gives me more freedom, not less. Mm-hmm. That in prioritizing my life, it's not that I can't do the exciting things because they always fall to the wayside. It's that I can know how to engage the exciting things, because when I engage with them, I know what kind of margin they can have in my life. And I say that from just the context of like, I think we can think of the mundane everyday things as just, less impactful, but they're actually the most impactful. So if you think about the course of your life, let's say that all of us are 60 years old and we're reflecting on our life, like what made up your life wasn't actually the one trip you took to Bora Bora. It wasn't the like one time that your family did this. What made up your life was the things you did every day. Mm-hmm. Like the most of your life will be the things you did every single day. And so prioritization has just allowed me.
Unless you died a martyr.
Unless you died a martyr.
Just kidding. Yeah, that one moment was pretty significant.
Good point. Yeah. For most of us. No, I'm kidding. Anyway, that kind of thinking has gotten me to a place where when I prioritize my life, I think about all these different communities that I'm engaged with, and I think about where they fit within the prioritization structure that I've created for my life. So when I think about my relationship with the Lord, like that's what I have to bring to everything. So my first priority is my relationship with the Lord and my relationship with me. That like if I'm not going to the Lord and understanding more about who I am, then I can't bring any of that down the line. And so that's why a lot of times we're talking about personal prayer time all the time and things like that. Because if you're not doing that, what you're going to begin realizing is you're going to be living a life that's uncertain as to what you're even bringing to the environments that are down your priority list, like what you're saying. So like God and me, something like that. Below that, like this is an area where it's hard for me to even like say it, because for a long time I fought it because I think sometimes it's idolized. But the next thing on there should be family, right? It's my spouse and then my kids. What I can find in the church a lot is that we stop there because we say the primary priority is the only priority. That's not how the church has ever taught anything. That primary means primary because it puts things in right order. It's the same way that like I love Jesus, but I'm also called to love my wife. I have to love Jesus above all things, but that allows me to love my wife more. Me prioritizing my family and making them the primary, not the only, not sola, if we can like go into the theological realm, not sola, but primary, it allows me to then put everything else in a higher place because it's in right order. And then below that, usually what you're going to have here is something regarding the call on your life. So you're going to have work. You're going to have like a communal context. Damascus is interesting because it fits here on mine because it has a church context to it. It has a secular context to it. So a lot of the Damascus oriented things for me fall on a priority that's kind of on like a third tier. And then below that is all those kind of exceptional things. So the thing I do once a month, right? The thing that I do once every couple of weeks, like those are things that still matter and I still need to be able to engage in, but I have to engage in them in a way that doesn't elevate them above the other things, that when they're in right order, I'm a better version of the person in those things. So I guess my answer to this would be, how do I confront the challenges that are faced in engaging in multiple communities? The first thing I would do is prioritize my life and then see where each of those communities fit within that prioritization structure and then determine my engagement from there. And I'm always going to be on mission, even if it's me being there for 5 minutes, right? That's the mission I'm called to. Or if I'm there every day, like I am with my wife and with my daughter. And so I would say prioritization, but in making priorities, don't make it in such a way where it's this only and not this, but rather this primary, this secondary, this tertiary, and then down the line.
Brett, how intentional have you been with that personally? So like because you actually are all over the place, right? Like you have a lot of passions, yes. Right? And so because you have a lot of passions, like you have a lot, you know, like that passion wells up in you and you like, do I go here? Do I go here? Do I do this? Mm-hmm. How have you figured out in yourself to systematically prioritize so that you are focused on the primary things you're called to and you don't dilute what God's asking of you?
Yeah, thanks. I am pretty regimented. So I've done it in a very practical way. I just look at my week and I look at like certain pockets that I'm going to dedicate to each of the priorities, right? So whenever I look at a week, because I think sometimes we're like, what we tend to overestimate what we can do in a week and underestimate what we can do in a year. And so when you look at the week, just setting the bar like sufficient for that week, like mm-hmm. don't go and say, I'm going to do all of this starting tomorrow. But what I do is I find a block for the week that I'm going to take my personal prayer time in. And you can put that on a calendar. You don't have to. I do. I just put it in my calendar and that's where I hope to have it. And if I miss it, it's not the end of the world. Just find another place in the day for it to fall, but it at least gives me the ability to say, that's my aim. And then I have pockets for family, which is my second thing. So I've really been trying this recently that when I'm not traveling, because I do travel a bit, I look at the 5:30 to 7:30 block and I don't do anything during it. So if a guy wants to meet up one-on-one, me, Aaron, or me and you, Dan, have business like outside of the normal work hours, I do it after that because that block is for my family. Like I need to be there and that allows me to stay in rhythm. And then from there, I look at all the atypical things. So if it is a week that I'm traveling, then instead of just a 2-hour block, there's going to be an evening that I block off because there's going to be 2 days that I'm not in the house. And then I really do bring it into that kind of microstructure. Yeah. That's not how everybody wants to work because sometimes you want some flexibility, but that allows me again, not to like build a prison that I have to stay in, but build a structure that has some wiggle, but allows me to know that the things that I am saying are my priority are actually finding themselves mm-hmm. prioritized in my schedule.
When if you're looking at your different communities as the person who's asking the question and speaking mm-hmm. of like, and I think they said church, I wrote down church,
yeah,
school,
the parentheses,
these different things that they're in, then the more intentional you are with your calendar, the more likely you're going to be able to be present when you're in those.
Is there anything worse than being somewhere but not being there? Like, I don't think mm-hmm. so. Like, it's horrible. It's like this snuck up on me. I'm all of a sudden here. I don't really care to listen to any of you. I needed to be here because I know I said I would.
Yeah.
Like none of us like that.
You teach a religious ed class at your parish, but you never prepare for it. Yes, then you're probably not doing mission group.
Right. And you're just checking a box.
Yeah,
to Aaron's point, it's not a task list, but rather it's me being alive in the environments I'm in.
Got anything, Aaron?
I'm trying to ask what's the heart of the person who's asking this question. Mm-hmm. And I'm perceiving that like, you know, what is the way that I'm engaging with the people in these communities? Because the question was community, not, I don't know, area of influence.
Yeah.
So like Brad, even as you're suggesting the prioritization, like how do you suppose the people who are on the lower end of that priority list, like feel about your relationship? Or is it something that like you can engage honestly?
I think that was my wrestle when I first started trying it on. My initial like thought before starting to prioritize my life in that way was it'll make me robotic and it'll make the people that fall down the list feel less a part of my life. And that's actually been the opposite of what I've encountered. Like they actually feel more a part of my life because the part I give to them is real. So, I mean, a great example is actually just today. I had a guy reach out and say, hey, I loved getting to catch up. Would you have more time? I'm like, I'm actually booked through the new year. And it's not that every single pocket's taken. It's just with the way that I'm structuring my life until the new year, I can't really consider adding something else in. But he like, I responded immediately, didn't feel pressure. His response was like, thanks so much for getting back to me. I'll just put a reminder in my phone and reach back out in January. And it like, again, it's not, that's not going to be everyone's life. So I'm not trying to relate that. But for me, that was an evidence to me that that person's not, they don't feel distant from me. They feel honored that I'm being honest. It's like, I want to give you my time when I give you my time. Yep. I don't want to just fit you in.
But you know, even one step further, you may not feel a call. So like, I learned this on a business podcast. The person was like saying like, you know, they were an author and a speaker and a business leader. And they're like, people will constantly reach out to me and ask me, hey, can you mentor me? And she was like, I can't mentor everyone. And so she doesn't want to like push someone aside and ignore them, but she wants to answer them in an honoring way. So she would say, actually, right now, what I feel called to in my life is to invest in boom, boom, boom. And because of that, I don't have the time allotted to mentor you. And then possibly give them some other option. Like you could reach out to this person. They may be a good, or something along those lines, but
that's
you can really
advice.
Do that. I'm prioritizing these missions. And because of that, I actually just don't have the time. And because I've found myself there are people who want to do something or asking something of me. And I'm like, I don't feel called to that. And so instead of just ignoring them or saying, oh, reach out again, because I don't want them to reach out again. It's actually, I answer them by sharing what I feel called to. And because I'm dedicated to these things, mm-hmm. I don't have the human capacity to do that for you. And I think people feel honored by that as well, because you're being direct and you don't have to have the obligation that you have to do everything just because if your pastor asks you to do something, you're not required to do what your pastor asks you to do at your parish. Right. And I think sometimes people feel that. Mm-hmm. Can I jump into my two cents? Because it's part of that.
Or can I give a relevant Babylon Bee article?
Oh my goodness.
Wait, how often do you talk about Babylon Bee?
Pretty consistently. Great little article this past week.
I didn't think he was being serious. I thought he was just trying to throw you off.
Okay. After third reschedule attempt. around. Christian friends agree to just have dinner together in heaven sometime.
That's actually really good.
That's really good. All right.
Maybe try that one next time.
My two cents. So
that's hysterical. Yeah,
how do you maintain mission in these different missional communities? I honestly, when I heard that question, the first thought that came to my mind was, let's be careful of missional scrupulosity. So in the same way, if we are all called to holiness and mission, and sometimes we can have scrupulosity in our life of holiness and our pursuit of God and virtue, we can also accidentally fall into scrupulosity in our life of mission to think that I'm never being missionary enough, or I'm not doing enough mission. And ultimately, one of my favorite quotes about evangelization is Pope Benedict XVI. He said, evangelization is teaching people the art of living. So I'm evangelizing and I'm on mission wherever I am, school, church, work, family, whatever it is, as long as I'm living life abundantly and I'm living life with love, with joy, with compassion, with mercy, that my life is meant to be the gospel. And so when I authentically live the gospel with my breath and with my words and with my life, then I'm on mission. And so I think sometimes we can reduce, and Aaron, your insight was great, because it's mission is more about who we are as opposed to what we do. So don't have the scrupulosity that I'm not doing enough. And when, like Brad, like you said, when we know what we're called to do and we prioritize that, then we're focused on doing what God's asking us to do with our time, with our life, and focus on being who God's asking us to be. And so to some extent, it's just like asking each of these different pockets, saying, Lord, how do you want me to be on mission here? And it's going to look different. So if it's I have all these different mission communities and I have to have a mission in each of them, you're probably not going to, you're just going to stress yourself out, right? As opposed to just, I'm going to live life abundantly in all these areas. And I think if I live missionally, like if I live a missional life, no matter what, wherever I am, I'm on mission, right? Like I was on the airplane. Well, I guess this is a bad example because it's not a community, but I was flying home this morning, right? And I was on the airplane. I'm not asking myself like concretely, like, how do I be on mission on an airplane, right? Like I'm just being missional and I'm having a conversation with a human being next to me and I'm engaging in them. And that's naturally going to lead to an ability to share the gospel or not, right? But I'm not like sitting down with an agenda, like I'm going to share the gospel and pray over this. No, I'm being a human being that loves others, but I'm a human being who is missional. And so when we are that, we're able to really just teach people the art of living by living our life for Christ and with Christ. And so I think if my heart for this question and this person who's asking this question is just don't be scrupulous and don't feel like you're not doing enough, because that's not what the Lord, he doesn't want to throw that on you, right? But you do want to be intentional. So if you're feeling like, okay, I have these different pockets, what is it God asking me to do there? Just sit down, make a list and say, Lord, how do you want me to live missional in my parish? How do you want me to live missional in my workplace? And the Lord's going to guide you in that and just do whatever he tells you to do. I know for me, like parish life is a huge part of the American Catholic Church, right? And parishes need flourishing volunteers to thrive. And so much of my early missional call was so deeply rooted to parish life. I was a parish youth minister, a parish director of religious ed. I loved parish life. I loved getting to know all the families in the parish and knowing the younger kids, the older kids, the parents. Parish life was this beautiful mission field for me. When I went into Damascus and this apostolate really took off, that my ability to spend a lot of time in the parish on mission really shrank, right? My full-time mission now became Damascus. And so just asking the Lord, Lord, how do you want me to engage in parish life now? And then I just do what I feel like he's calling me to do in that area. Does it look nearly like, does parish life look the same now as it did yesterday? No. Does it look the same as it does in some of the other missional communities? No, absolutely not. And so just, I think the key is just do whatever he asks you to do. Like do what Jesus is asking you to do. Listen to him, be intentional, and then go do it.
Amen.
Yeah. I was going to add too, Dan, when you think about that, where does the scrupulosity come in? Because to me, like I think because we work in an environment where we have young adults coming in all the time and they're wanting to be great saints, they're wanting to be great Christians, they're wanting to be great fathers and mothers and all these things, they have all of these presuppositions on what it means to be these different things. I'm not always convinced that their presuppositions are wrong, but there is this like measurement that I think comes in my experience when I don't examine my life regularly with the Lord. Like when I sit down and examine it with the Lord, it's very clear to me when he's like, hey, you were a little hesitant there and you didn't need to be. Why don't we talk about why that might have been, right? Or you were really, really bold there and you didn't need to be, right? Like that actually was counterproductive. So where's the scrupulosity come in? I mean, aside from not bringing it to the Lord, because I think that could be a catch-all answer, but is it just because we're nervous about not, mounting up or not?
I think scrupulosity is scrupulosity. So whether I'm like being scrupulous scrupulous about like, oh my gosh, like, did I do like this act of virtue well
did
enough?
I pray did the rosary
yeah,
well enough?
Yeah, yeah. Like, so if you're a scrupulous, like, I think it's probably rooted in anxiety and like self-worth. Like, I'm not good enough and God doesn't think I'm good enough. But like, right, like the person who's truly loved by the Father isn't worried, like, am I doing it well enough, you know, to please my Father? And so I think there's a little bit of like a works mentality there. Mm-hmm. But I think also, I'm assuming this was like a college age student or a young person who's asking this question since they referenced school. But I think sometimes in our younger years, we don't want to close any of our options. So it's like, oh, well, I want to be like all things to all people, if you will, in a negative way, where it's like, okay, I'm going to keep all of my options open, all my doors open, as opposed to say like, no, I know God's calling me to this and I'm going to do this as best as I can. Like, I was thinking to myself when I was also heard the question, I was like, well, how many poor people did St. John Vianney serve in India? And how many confessions did Our Lady, Mother Teresa listen to in her parish? Right. And like, the answer is both of them, none. Right. And so, because Mother Teresa was excellent at what God asked Mother Teresa to do. And John Vianney was excellent at what John Vianney was called to do. But John Vianney was 100% parish oriented. Mother Teresa was 100% street oriented. So just do what God's asking you to do. Mm-hmm. And don't worry about like, man, I have all these obligations to fulfill, or the Father's going to be upset at me that I wasn't good enough. Like, no, just be excellent in what he's asking you to do and have fun in that. And I think sometimes specializing in a mission, knowing exactly like, oh, this is the special thing God has for me, really is a freedom, not a prison.
Yeah, I had the same inclination. I was wondering how it tied in with you, Aaron, because you had mentioned, I'm forgetting it, but that mission is more about identity than task. And then when you said worth, I think that was my inclination too, is that scrupulosity actually just comes from a lack of understanding my worth in the identity that's truly mine. Right. Yeah.
I think the key to what you said, Dan, is just asking the Lord, you know, what do you think about me? Like, help me to see myself the way that you see me. Help me to see the purpose that I was made for the way that you see it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it, easier said than done. I mean, we can ask that prayer and we can pray that prayer. And when we pray that prayer, we have confidence that God will speak. And also, like, that's a question that I find myself asking the Lord all the time. And that answer is constantly being redeveloped.
Right.
Right. Because a word just struck me as you were speaking too, that like the mission on my life isn't a list of tasks as much as it is a lens through which I'm called to see the world mm-hmm. and through which others are called to see me. Right. That I think the more authentic we can be to that, I'm wrestling back and forth, is like, when I ask God about my mission, am I asking about who I am or what I'm called to do? Mm. Is mission a task, or is it a part of me?
I think it's a manifestation, right? So it's not necessarily asking who I am, but like, given who I am in the circumstance that I'm finding myself in, mm-hmm. what could I do there? Right. At least that's what it seems like to me. But whenever we think it's me having to do something, I think what comes to me is that's when task orientation comes. But when I'm like, oh wow, like this is who I know myself to be, these are the strengths I have, and I'm in this environment, I can bring that strength to elevate the environment, to help the people here live more fully. Like, it's almost just like a tree that is now like blossoming mm-hmm. fruit, and then the fruit is what goes.
There's a great parallel for this in the Stormlight Archive. I wish I could share with you guys.
This is the full circle. I will say this though, one of the things, I don't know how it ties in, but it keeps coming to mind as you guys are sharing. I do also, to the person like asking this question, if you find yourself just thinking you have to be involved in all of these communities too, it might be actually worth asking, like, are you investing in all these communities because you're called to, or because you think you have to? And the reason I bring that up is there's a line that stood out to me like 5 years ago, just early in my time at Damascus. And it's shaped a lot of my like subsequent decisions. And it was that busyness is artificial significance, that like, we tend to busy ourselves to show the world how significant we are. Like, if you could just see how full my schedule is, if you could just see how long my to-do list is, if you could just like, so on and so forth, if you could, here's how many communities I'm a part of. And even like the way we do college and the way that we do applications for jobs lends itself to this. Like, look at how busy I've been and how good I've done at being so busy. Mm-hmm. And I think that it would do us all well to regularly have an assessment of like, Lord, am I still called to all of these things? Because there's actually a beauty to seasons. There's a beauty to me being very invested in something and then actually being asked to, like you with parish life, Dan, like there's a beauty because there's a new leader that has to come in.
Yep.
And that's amazing, because that gives someone else the opportunity to respond to a call and you not to feel like you have to do everything. So anyway, it's been on my mind since I heard the question. So I think
it's interesting, because if you think about the person who over volunteers or says yes to mm-hmm. everything, it's often probably rooted in a lack of self-worth, because I want to please other people and I'm scared that they're not going. So it's the
same root of scrupulosity. It's the exact same.
Yeah. It's this fear of like, are people going to love me? And so just really taking this to the Father and finding your approval in him, and then mm-hmm. just asking him, okay, what do you want me to do in these different mission communities, and just do what he says.
Yeah. That's really good. I also, just before I throw it over to you, Aaron, to see if we have a mission of the week for the people listening. Also, if you're in your life too, and you're finding yourself like, I am called to these different communities, also recognize that the way by which you can be involved in some of these communities as well is through prayer. I think mm-hmm. like the power of intercession is amazing. There's tons of missions that are close to my heart that I don't have the bandwidth as a person living in time and space to go and do, but I have a financial resource and I can give financially in some ways. I have a time resource where I can, in my time of intercession, pray for the communities that I'm not able to be as actively involved in. And that's a real beauty.
That's good.
Mission of the week, Aaron.
Okay. So I've had some time to prepare this as you guys have been talking.
If this goes to the Stormlight archives, I promise.
I know. No. I hesitate. I'm conscientious that a lot of times we have a mission of the week. It's like, hey, sit down and pray a little bit.
Yeah,
So I do want to invite us into that process just because I feel like that's the real nut that we kept going back to here mm-hmm. is that ultimately mission is about discovering God's plan for my identity.
Mm-hmm.
So I mentioned that I do go back to that and I ask that question consistently. And I want to give, I'll give a mission based on kind of a testimony of my own experience. So probably about 18 months ago, I went through a really intentional process of sitting down and asking the Lord, like, what have you made me for? Who have you made me to be? And God was very clear about giving me an answer to that question. And it was a simple and direct answer. And then my follow-up was, okay, Lord, how do you want me to do that thing? And I walked away from, it was probably 3 or 4 days process of prayer time with like a list of 6 words that were, these are the things that I need to be doing. And for the last, 18-ish months, during the course of my prayer time, like I go back to those words, I intercede for those. Mm-hmm. I do those things. And in the context of my conversations, the way I schedule my week, I try to make sure that those are the priorities that I'm
it's become a litmus test for you.
Yeah. Right. So here's my mission of the week this week. Sit down and ask God, who do you want me to be? Or what have you made me for?
Mm-hmm.
And continue to ask that question until you feel like you have some kind of a distinct response.
Mm-hmm.
And then the follow-up question is, how do you want me to do that thing? And then just start building a lifestyle around doing it. Like until we can get to that place, I think this question is going to be one that's filled with exhaustion.
Mm-hmm.
But when you have that precision, everything just falls into line.
I can't wait to do that. That's a great one. That's really good.
I love that. It actually reminds we have different chaplains every week at Catholic Youth Summer Camp and mm-hmm. in the summertime. And it's funny because the chaplains, like, because we're a lay organization and we run the same week of camp week after week after week, we kind of run like a machine, right? Like we know what we're doing and lay people have the roles and the chaplains are coming in and out. It's not the same people. And so they don't have a lot of tasks to do. Same with the religious sisters who come, they don't have a lot of tasks to do. They really have a call to a ministry of presence. And the priests and religious who are super grounded in their identity and they know who they are, they walk around this campus and they're just the fruit of the Holy Spirit just pours off of them, right? Because, and that's what their ministry is. It's just the fruit of the Holy Spirit is their ministry and they have such an impact and young people want to talk to them and ask them questions and engage with them. The ones who come that are just really focused on like, what do I do or how can I get involved? And what they have a harder time, right? It's not their presence isn't ministering. It's that the tasks are ministering. And I think that Aaron,
that's great.
That mission of the week that you're giving is saying, yeah, how is my presence really going to minister to people as opposed to the things that
in a unique way, like you were saying, that specialization idea, like, cause when I can get down to how me and the unique gifts that God's given me and the unique ways made me, that's sweet. Friends, this has been Beyond Damascus, the show where encounter meets mission. If you've been blessed by today's episode, feel free to go back and listen to some of the other questions that we've tackled that might be relevant to you in this season of life. If you think that there's someone else in your life that might benefit from questions like these, send them a link because we'd love to continue the conversation and to continue to impact mission wherever you're at and wherever you're coming from. We release every week, so follow us and subscribe to our channel and comment if you have any questions that you'd like to see a little bit more appropriate to your season of life. And we'd love to see if we can answer those here on the show. We just want to make sure that as we're closing today and as we're looking at the pennies that we threw into this jar, that you could remember, as always, that mission
makes sense.
C-E-N-T-S, because it's like S-E-N-S-E.
See you next time.
You're listening to Beyond Damascus, the show where encounter meets mission. Beyond Damascus is aired on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network and across Ohio on St. Gabriel Radio. You can listen to the whole version of today's episode on www.ewtn.com/radio/podcasts, or check us out on YouTube or your favorite podcast app. We will be right back after a short commercial break.
Proclaiming the faith, changing lives.
The year was 1983. Mother Angelica Live debuts on EWTN's second anniversary. Thanks to her rising profile, the guest roster for the shows includes Pat Boone, Chuck Colson, Betty Hutton, and others.
To learn more about Mother Angelica's life and the history of EWTN, visit ewtn.com/Mother Angelica.
Another great podcast on EWTN Podcast Central is Down to Earth with Keith Nestor. Former Protestant pastor and Catholic convert, Keith Nestor responds to questions and comments from listeners and shares his unique perspective as he explores faith, life, and culture. You can hear this and other faith-filled podcasts at EWTN Podcast Central. Visit EWTN.com/radio and click on Podcast Central today.
Greetings, I'm Father Cedric Pizzegna. I have a saying that I absolutely love. Who you are is God's gift to you, but who you become is your gift to God. I'm going to help you to become your best, to be all that you can be. I hope that you will tune in each Sunday evening, 8:30 p.m. Eastern Time, 5:30 p.m. Pacific Time, right here on EWTN Radio.
With news from EWTN's Vatican Bureau, you can watch all of the important events from Rome, even if you don't have TV access. Using the latest technology, we've made it possible to watch the latest news from the Holy See, all delivered directly to your home via live streams. Watch live on EWTN's YouTube channel and follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and X.
Welcome back to Beyond Damascus, the show where encounter meets mission. Beyond Damascus is aired on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network and across Ohio on St. Gabriel Radio.
Do we have a question of the week this
week? Yes.
Okay.
The question, yeah, we do have a question, Aaron. Would you like to know what it is?
Jeez, don't talk back to Aaron, okay?
Yes, Jack. Yeah, until you get on BattleBots with your robotics, I don't want to hear it.
They wouldn't let us. The question of the week is, what is the best way to welcome non-Catholics to the Mass when it seems like a bunch of steps or rules to follow instead of a church service?
Okay, what's the best way to invite non-Catholics to the Mass when it seems like a bunch of steps or rules rather than a church service?
I'll go first.
Oh, and wow.
That was great.
Yeah.
That went way across the
studio. Other penny might be gone forever.
All right. My two cents would be, I think often we as Catholics falsely assume people are going to hate the Mass. And so I think we're very hesitant to invite non-Catholics to Mass because we think it's not going to be a desirable experience for them. Mm-hmm. And I would challenge that, especially in this modern context, right? That I think the back of our mind is like, oh, the Protestants, it's so easy because they have these church services with great music and good preaching and lights and sound and hospitality, and the Mass is just like, you know? And I think there are definitely parishes where the Mass is unattractive, right? Because of the music or the
hospitality or the homilies.
Yeah. And so we want to make the Sunday experience better. But I think honestly, as we get into, like, I think there's a hunger now in American Christianity, if you will, for a deeper experience in their relationship with God. That enough people in their relationship with God have had kind of the hoopla experience. And so there's a lot of people who are like, how can I have more? Like, what's the next step? And so I think if you're asking people kind of what are you looking for in your relationship with God? And so treat an invitation, not as just an invitation to get someone there, but as a pastoral relationship, right? What are you looking for in your relationship with God? Or what are you looking for in a church community? And listen to them, right? And then communicate how the Mass could be a great way to find those things, right? Most people are going to say, like, what I'm looking for in my relationship with God is being able to hear his voice more or have him guide me in my spiritual life, right? And then just explain how the Mass helps you do that. And I think, like, because the hunch on me is, man, it's so much easier to invite friends or people to like a really well done Protestant church service, right? That'd be an easier invitation. But I think it actually is that when I think about kind of why I love the Mass the most or what my favorite Masses to attend are, my favorite Mass to attend is the 7 a.m. Mass with no music and when the lights are kind of low and it's just quiet and contemplative, right? So like, because that's when like that quiet contemplative Mass fuels my spiritual life the most, even though I'm a charismatic and love worship and love like a time of worship, right? That there's something so beautiful about that, that it fuels my spiritual life. And so there's other people like that out there that aren't looking for the Sunday service that's at the church down the road all the time, that maybe they are looking for deeper mystery. I invited someone to Mass a few months ago, and afterwards I asked them what their experience was. And they were raised Catholic as very little, but they left like at around 11 or 12, right? They hadn't been to Mass in a long time. And it was their first time coming back. And so I was a little nervous, like, oh, I did, because I didn't theologically explain things to them before they went. I was just like, oh, I'm just just invited them. I didn't know they were going to go. So I asked them how it went. And it was so interesting because their response was, I like how theatrical it was. And I was like, what? And they were like, yeah, you could tell that everyone really cared about what was going on. And there was a lot of focus mm-hmm. given to what was taking place. And it was like, I would have never have thought that that was going to be their experience, but they just sat back and they watched and they could see that everything centered around the altar and everything centered around the Eucharist. And they were like, I like how there's all the stained glass windows. And I liked that they were wearing like the cassock, or they didn't say the word cassock, but I like how everyone was like dressed, like they were focused on the mm-hmm. it was just theatrical to them. Mm-hmm. And so I think probably a better way to say that is they noticed the importance of the Eucharist. And so I think everyone's going to have their own experience when they go to Mass. I don't think we should assume so low of people that they're not going to enjoy it just because of the Mass.
But one of the, I guess, questions or criticisms that I'll often hear about our work at Damascus is that the type of experience that we provide for kids can't be matched by what's happening at their parish. So, you know, the Mass that we have here at my local parish, I don't have the same dynamic preaching, or I don't have the same dynamic music, and I don't have all the big screens and all the excitement, and I don't have hundreds and hundreds of kids in the room and
sure.
and young adult missionaries and all that stuff. And one of the things that I love to tell them when they bring that to me is that here at Damascus, we actually make a really concerted effort to celebrate, to present the Mass in varieties of expressions. Mm-hmm. So Dan, like the way you just identified the 7 a.m. Mass at the parish, that's more contemplative and quiet. Believe it or not, even here at Damascus, where you know, ruckus and amazing and powerful events and stage production is our specialty, our weekly staff Mass is actually very much like you described. Mm-hmm. It's a contemplative, quiet, subdued expression of the liturgy built to foster a greater intimacy with the Lord in the Eucharist.
Yeah, and then at summer camp, we have Masses that have worship music yep, and everything. Yep. And then we also have Masses that are just completely quiet to give the campers both experiences.
Yes, because to say I want both means you actually have to present both. That doesn't mean I want both, therefore ignore your preference and acquiesce to mine.
And the key mm-hmm. is then it's almost everything strips away and you're able to see what's most important. Yep. And it's Jesus.
Definitely. Yeah. I the only thought I have on it is that you guys haven't hit is just I think when I'm reflecting on don't presume that it's going to be boring to people. Yeah. I think sometimes we can get in such a, I don't know, like a presupposition that like we are a super exclusive environment that no one could kind of understand the way we do.
I'm so sorry. I lost happened? It. Aaron just tried to flick a fly with his finger. I've never seen a human being do that before. It was the craziest mannerism.
Brad.
I'm so sorry, Brad.
No, don't be sorry.
I was trying to maintain composure, but this man just went like this.
What was funny is I was watching you and I was like trying to figure out my next word and I'm like, what is Dan
Why is
doing?
He fly? And the fly wasn't even close. I mean, it was like at least 2 feet away.
I missed that part. This gives good context. I'm trying to say is we're not as exclusive as we think we are, and there are people who might actually be able to see something in it that we who have been going for a long time might miss.
Yeah,
that's my general thought.
Well, can I share one of my favorite moments in my life?
Yeah, sure. Oh boy, what's gonna happen here?
I was on a mission trip and we were putting a roof on a house and there was like a wasp nest that was attacking us.
Yeah,
and one of the guys in the trip was really anxious about the wasps, so I took out the hammer out of my tool belt and I went to hit a wasp out of the air. And and he was like, put that hammer away. You can't kill a wasp with that hammer. You're so stupid. And I picked out a wasp and smacked it out of the sky with the hammer. And I was on a ladder and it came down and landed at his feet.
Nice.
That is amazing.
That was God and smiling upon you at the moment.
He was such a funny kid. He was one of my favorite people in the world. Nice. And he immediately like accepted his dose of humility.
And repented. He repented publicly.
Like, I'm so sorry. You can hit a wasp.
999,000 times you would have missed that stupid wasp. But it's that one time.
Yeah.
Oh man. I'm sorry, Brad, for laughing as you were saying something important.
As I was trying to make my way through.
I've got a great 2 cents if I can help.
Aaron, please.
I'm struggling because I actually have. Oh, that's it. Thanks, guys, for
both
celebrating.
Of them.
Yeah. I guess everyone can hit a wasp with a hammer now and then.
Okay, I'm debating between two, but I think I'm going to lock into the first. So
do it.
Dan, similar to what you were saying about how we underestimate what experience someone might have with the Mass. The Mass is deeply scriptural, and I think oftentimes we as Catholics may actually even miss the deep symbolism and particularly scriptural symbolism that exists in this kind of routine, you know, quote unquote activity that we engage in every week. So I'll recommend a book real quick. It's a friend of our ministry, Scott Hahn, wrote a book called The Lamb's Supper. And he gave a talk by that same title probably, I don't know, 15 years ago. And it just absolutely struck me as he walked through the expression of the Mass and how the Mass is actually a perfect fulfillment of almost like a recipe of what's prescribed in the book of Revelation, as John describes his revelation of heaven and how it is that the eschatology, like the, the end of time will be that we'll be invited into that experience of relationship with the Lord. And the premise that he has is that like this was a reality that the early church knew so closely it was impossible to ignore. And that when we see John's vision of heaven, that we are actually invited into a now expression of that invitation to heaven. That the Mass, unlike any other prayer that we can pray, actually invites us into the fullest expression of what the wedding feast of the Lamb is like, of what the kingdom of heaven will be like. And yet it's shrouded in symbolism and in human expression, but it's a deeply mystical experience and it's a deeply scriptural experience. And, you know, I don't want to paint with too wide a brush, but oftentimes you've probably heard that there's a sort of an assumption that Protestants know their scripture a little better than Catholics do. And I've not experienced myself, but I've heard amazing testimony of like a Protestant who will come to Mass for the first time, who will say, I had no idea that the Catholics believe in scripture. Like the Mass is filled with scripture. Mm-hmm. Every response that we pray is a scriptural response. You know, we don't just focus around one Bible reading. We focus around four mm-hmm. on a typical Sunday. And that's ignoring the fact that all of the antiphons and mm-hmm. all of the mm-hmm. introductory prayers are they come from a scriptural foundation. So the Mass has tremendous appeal, both from that place of a beautiful and symbolic and mystical understanding, and also from a deeply scriptural understanding as well.
Yeah, I think being able to frame that is so important, because there is something about the legitimacy that comes from being able to frame that out for someone. So like if there's someone that you've been like having conversation with and you're thinking about bringing them to the Mass, it's not a bad idea to start actually with like, have you ever read scripture before? Here's like and going to a couple things, because I'm even thinking about the different ways that it's foreshadowed in the Gospels and obviously Revelation, but just those different ways that you can say, hey, what it's saying here, you're going to be able to see that like when we go there. So just keep an eye for this and this. In the context of relationship, if you have a relationship with someone that's close to you and know this is important to you and are like, hey, I'd love to experience something that's important to you, I think it's a
awesome. Can I make just another quick point is we've talked about sort of this balance and relationship between a more traditional expression of liturgy and maybe a more modern modern expression of liturgy, right? And I would love to just celebrate and to acknowledge that most individuals who with their whole heart are attracted to a more traditional expression of liturgy, it's actually to that sense of mystery mm-hmm. and to that sense of like this presentation of this beautiful deep scriptural reality that attraction stems from. So I forget how the question was phrased, but it was something along instead of a church service. And I would argue that when we fall into the temptation as a church of trying to kind of water down or make more presentable the Mass, and I'm not talking about accessible and mm-hmm. And beautiful, right? You know, we try to do that at Damascus, that we do implement modern music, but in a way that is beautiful and faithful to the heart of the church, right? But when we present the Mass in a way, or when we try to water down the Mass so that it might become more normal, I think we can tend to actually lose that mm-hmm. that thing that is actually at its core the most important.
Completely. Not only the most important, something that sets us apart.
Yeah. Right?
So modern man is looking, many people want the mist. Many people want mm-hmm. I think that the Lamb's Supper really changed my whole outlook of the Mass as well. So
way to go, Scott. We love you.
Yeah. but I think that like learning all the parts of the Mass and then walking through a person on the parts of the Mass. I mean, it's so funny, but the penitential rite like blew my mind that, oh, wow, it's so beautiful that we start this liturgy like asking for forgiveness of sins and receiving forgiveness of sins. And then the offertory, it's so beautiful that I get to offer my life as a living sacrifice to the Lord as we carry the bread and wine down, the work of our hands down to the altar. And then the work of our hands is transformed into Jesus's body, blood, soul, and divinity. Like there's so much beautiful theology that I think we almost kind of undermine our Protestant brothers and sisters if we don't want to show them the Mass, like as if they're like not theologically wise enough to understand the beauty of it, right? And I think even inviting, as you were sharing, Aaron, I was just thinking like inviting a Protestant brother and sister or inviting a non-Christian to Mass, not as a agenda just to get them to become Catholic, but as a means for Christian fellowship, right? That that there's something about like, oh, I want to show you liturgy and then a willingness to go to their service as well to see what they do. Not mm-hmm. that I'm going to skip Mass on Sunday and go to the church down the road, but to make a priority to, okay, I'm going to go to Mass and I'm going to go to church. Why? Because it's Christian fellowship, no matter what is good, right? Mm-hmm. And so if I show an interest in what they're doing and what they're experiencing, they're going to show an interest in what I'm doing and what I'm experiencing. And then either way, we're both going to be better because of it. So if it's a coworker and you're like, man, I really wish I had more like Christian fellowship at work. This is how you can build that Christian fellowship at work, right?
Totally.
Like actually invest in each other's spiritual lives. And then that's going to create a brotherhood or a sisterhood that you now have in the workplace that you didn't have before. Mm-hmm. And you can't really do that if you have an agenda to make them Catholic, right? If the agenda is, I want to relate to you better as a fellow Christian, I think we're going to be way better off.
I think Matt Frad does that excellently. Like when he brings on a Protestant brother or sister and has like a long form discussion with them, he'll regularly even put it like it, just to call out the elephant sometimes. Like if you were to ask me, like, would my desire be for you to eventually become Catholic? Yeah, because I found it to be the most beautiful expression of the faith that I know. That said, like, I want to hear about everything. Like you're able to be honest and be like relational mm-hmm. at the same time. Like you can totally, you don't have to forfeit the ability to honor them and support them and understand that they're bringing a different lens that will help your spiritual mm-hmm. life. And like, it doesn't have to be divorced from the other, I guess yeah. is what I'm saying. I'll throw these two cents in. My two cents, I want to take it. I had a little bit of a different angle, but hearing you two, I think I want to put a capstone on this thought. I think that one of the best ways to welcome non-Christians into the context of the Mass is by simply allowing them to enter into the context of the Mass, not feeling like you have to over-explain it, not feeling like you have to overemphasize these different pieces, because I think that what we underestimate sometimes is because we feel uncomfortable with uncertainty, we can sometimes leave people outside of the ability to wonder. And it's like, no, like, yes, it might be a little uncomfortable because you might be uncertain as to when we should stand and sit and kneel. And it might be a little uncomfortable that you don't know the words to the responses that everybody else does. But before I judge that as immediately a bad thing, why don't I just let it happen and understand that I can be a human in relationship with you afterwards? And if there is a part that was confusing and hurt you, we can talk about that. But my experience, when I've seen people that come into the Mass for the first time, and this would happen in college quite a bit because of just the way that we did outreach, my experience was oftentimes they're like, what was that all about? Like, it wasn't actually from a place of like, because I was uncertain, I was uncomfortable, and now I'm frustrated. It was, I don't really understand that. And I don't know of a better starting place to get to an evangelistic conversation than that.
Yeah.
Then like, I don't know if I understood that. Like we see this all of the time, just in normal human life. It's like, maybe God forbid, but we lose someone close to us. It's like, I don't understand that. Right. That's a first question. Or let's get it on the other side. It's like, man, there was a real breakthrough there and something amazing happened. And I don't really understand that. Right. Or like, man, I came out of that car accident unscathed and I don't really understand that. Or you can go into like so many scenarios, but the Mass has that power, maybe in probably from a theological perspective, definitely in a way that nothing else does, because there are parts of it that are like, that is so outside of my ability to grasp it that I'd like to ask a question about it, or I'd like to be inquisitive towards it, or I'm intrigued by it. And so I think that we can often and this is speaking to probably the person asking this question, a lot of the people that listen to this podcast regularly, you're usually looking through a missional lens, and you're probably usually thinking to yourself, like, how do I make sure to make a conversion most convenient for the person? But I think sometimes because we ask that question, instead of how can I just be faithful and how can I be in relationship, because we ask the first question and not the second, we'll hesitate to bring people into uncomfortable circumstances and situations when maybe that's exactly what they need in order to take the next step that they're called to take. So if there's a non-Christian in your life that's close to you, and I know that my mom does really well with this. She invites people to church all of the time with her. And my mom is not the most like theologically driven person. Like, she's not a person that's going to spend most of her time digesting all of the like theological writings of Thomas Aquinas, but she's a faithful Catholic who loves the beauty and differentness of the Mass and who understands it more and more year over year. And she just lets that be a part of her life that's accessible to others, just like all the other aspects of her life, like bringing someone over for dinner or giving someone a ride to work. Like, and I think that is so, so effective. And the way that sparks conversation, I don't think can be undermined. So I guess just to put a one liner on it, I think how can I approach bringing a non-Christian into the context of the Mass by simply doing it and not overthinking it and not undermining the power of wonder and awe.
It's good. I love it. I love that.
Another thing that's come to mind, Brad, is so Mass is the fullest expression of Catholicism, but it's not the only expression of Catholicism. So I know this isn't the way the question was worded necessarily, but if what the listener's asking is, how do I introduce someone to Catholicism? Like, if the Mass is overwhelming, there are other ways.
Yeah, great point.
So we run an event here at Damascus called the Outpouring, and one of our staff members made a comment at the Outpouring. It's like, you realize this is just essentially a really great Protestant service.
Service,
yeah. Right?
Service,
yeah. Mm-hmm. And it's like, yeah, well, I mean, like, it's not copyrighted. We gather for music and for prayer and for preaching, and mm-hmm. like, we want to build up the body of Christ.
Yeah.
So something like that, or a scripture study, or a small group, like, can be a great way to continue to introduce that positive experience with Catholicism in addition to what we're discussing.
Yeah, there's other evangelistic tools that we have. Well, also, the idea, so this I'm not going to get too much on a soapbox, but it does frustrate me sometimes when that question of like things like the Outpouring, let's even take it out of a personal context, but when that's questioned, it's like, no, like anything to get someone to like hear truth and start wrestling is a good thing. Like, what are we talking about? Like, don't allow the what in our minds we know to be perfect become the enemy of the good that allows them the next step on their journey to, well, you mentioned the eschaton. on earlier, but the perfection that we'll experience one day. Like, I do think that sometimes we can put the cart before the horse and not ask ourselves, like, how can we give as many opportunities for a positive engagement with Catholicism as humanly possible? Yeah, and there's going to be different ways to do that for everybody. Some people are going to benefit from going to the daily mass with Dan, and that's amazing. Some people are going to benefit from having an invite to come to something like the Outpouring. Some are going to have a benefit of entering an Advent Bible study with you. But
I think the liturgy, when you're familiar with other church experiences like the Outpouring, where you have preaching and worship and prayer ministry, like it, when you have experiences like that, and then you're introduced for the first time ever to the liturgy, you realize, well, this is a different kind of prayer. Because when I go to other services, I'm usually the customer, right? And like, you feel that way. The preacher is speaking to me. The preacher is motivating me to have an encounter with Jesus, right? But then when you enter into liturgical experiences, whether that's the mass or adoration, which is a liturgical experience, all of a sudden I'm no longer the main character. He is. And I think there's something really interesting about that, where all the prayer is directed there's something going this direction forward, as opposed to something coming to me. And someone who's familiar with Christian prayer services, when they all of a sudden get in front of a liturgical experience, they're like, oh, this is different. And then that's when the wonder comes, like, well, why did you do that? Why'd you do that? So often inviting people who are engaged in different Christian services is going to be a cool, stark reality, because it's going to spark some questions in them just naturally.
That's actually brilliant. Sweet. Yeah, it actually gives the context for the differentness. Yep. Like it gives the thing that you're comparing what you're experiencing in the mass to. I think that's actually brilliant.
That's why it's not bad to go to a church service that's non-Catholic and get fed by it and built up by it, because it's meant to feed you.
And it's a different kind of prayer. Exactly.
Yeah, it's a different kind of experience. And so you don't have to feel guilty doing that. It's good for your spiritual life. Then do it, right?
Yeah.
But the liturgical prayer, and it were like the church only asks that we do that for 1 hour of each week, right? Like, it's a particular kind of prayer. And so we can fill our lives with other things, because sometimes people leave the Catholic Church because they want these other experiences, right? And it's like, no, you should have those other experiences. Those are healthy things. Not saying that you should like bounce. I'm not like encouraging everyone just go find Protestant churches to go to, but those aren't bad. And we've got to, as Catholics, we have to stop acting like that's bad, and that we're gonna like somehow like fall prey to Satan by going to a Protestant church service, right? No, they're meant to edify you and build your spiritual life up. Do you need to be theologically discerning? Maybe, right? But I feel like most common lay people aren't like getting led theologically hardcore astray. Mm-hmm. But stay grounded in your weekly experience of the liturgy as well.
Yeah, I love that.
The mass is the same everywhere. It's universal, right? The mass that happens in the beautiful cathedrals of Rome is the same mass that's presented in my local parish.
It's unbelievable.
Whether I like the organist or not, right? Mm-hmm. And one final thought on this topic is, if truly you're going after, like, I want to experience for myself, or I want to invite somebody into an experience that is truly celebrates mystery, don't be ashamed of maybe seeking out like a particular mass. I think of even here in the Diocese of Columbus, some of the masses around the Triduum that are celebrated at our cathedral are just there. They completely blow me out of the water every time I attend, because the choir is so beautifully practiced, and everything flows in such a way that's been rehearsed,
yeah,
and orchestrated for the purpose of bringing honor and glory to, yeah, God. Like, I also don't want to encourage shopping around. Like, going to your local parish is a great way to engage consistently, mm-hmm, in the mass, but it's also good to have a variety of different experiences.
And even in that, the tenebrae is what I think of, yeah, often. And it's like, I think that's fascinating that the non-Christian that came with you, Dan, mentioned the theatrics of it. Mm-hmm. Like, there is a theatric to the liturgical like expressions that we have. And there always has been. Like, go to the traditional Latin mass. And I mean, like, it's like a play in motion, right? Like, it is, and it's meant to be that, because there's a sensory component to it, obviously, or we wouldn't have incense filling the entire space. Like, mm-hmm, obviously it's unto this kind of like, experiential being that we've been made to be. And so I think, yeah, don't underestimate how powerfully the mass can bring that alive. But also, to your point, Aaron, like, it's actually okay to have other contexts, mm-hmm, to welcome people into if that's not the right one for them at that time.
Wow. What a great discussion today. Brad, do you have a mission of the week for us?
I do, actually. So I'm excited about this. So, I want to encourage us to get outside of ourselves. I'm not going to just give the mission of the week for you to go bring someone to mass with you.
Come on, that's what's
but
going
yeah, because that would have been the most like
everyone
on the
was
nose.
Nervous.
That would have been the on the nose one. Coming. I think what I do want to emphasize, though, is we all have contexts that we're living our day-to-day life in. So we're at work, or we have people coming over to our house for a variety of reasons. In whatever context you find yourself in most often, or maybe where you find this opportunity, just make a note for yourself. Like, I want you to share the Catholic faith of yours with someone in your life you haven't shared it with before. So if it's a coworker and they've made a comment about your crucifix on your desk, and you've never actually expressed to them that, like, yeah, actually, what's your faith like tradition like? Because I was born and raised Catholic, and that's the reason I keep this there. Or if like someone comes over and you have some kind of seasonal decoration, if you have an Advent wreath or if you have something else, like get, like actually taking the time to, if someone notices something like that, or you find an opportunity, really just presenting like, yeah, I have, like, I am Catholic and I love it.
Ownership.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Ownership instead of just renting. Cause I think a lot of times we can do all of the cool things like wear the crucifix, have the Catholic radio bumper sticker, but never actually tell someone that like, I am proud that this is what I have. And I think that could get us along the line, and maybe someone that's listening will welcome someone to Mass from that.
Yeah. I love the Mass. This has been a fun conversation. I don't think we talk about the Mass often enough.
Well, it's a show about mission, and you know, so, and well, the Mass is super mission oriented.
Yes,
so.
which we also miss all the time, but that's for a different day.
I do love the Mass, and I do love mission. Brad, you may mention though, the word Mass actually comes from the word mission. Mm-hmm. That mission and the Mass are one expression in the same. We can't have relationship with the Lord outside of a relationship with mission. So amen. Thank you for joining us for Beyond Damascus. This is, of course, the show where Encounter meets mission. And I hope that this show was edifying for you, that this little 30-minute conversation of the Mass is getting you pumped and excited. If so, please like and subscribe to this show. It helps us to spread further, faster. Mm-hmm. And if you feel like today's conversation may be meaningful for someone in your life, maybe even that non-Catholic friend of yours who you might want to just put a little bug in their ear and say, hey, what do you think about this? Would you be interested in attending with me? I hope that it bears great fruit. If you have additional questions, post them in the comments or email or text them to Jack, because he gives out his cell phone number.
Yeah. Are we going to dox Jack?
Please don't. That would be terrible. We have a second mission of the week this week to try to kill a insect with a hammer.
Yeah, I like that. Yeah, yes. Jack,
be aware of your
surroundings. If you accomplish that, send that video to Jack as well.
Yeah. We're grateful that you joined us here this week. And remember, as always, friends,
mission makes sense. Get it?
God bless. Have a great night. Friends, thanks for listening to Beyond Damascus, the show where encounter meets mission. You can listen to the whole version of today's show by searching for Beyond Damascus on YouTube or your favorite podcast app.